Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $300 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $300 into something bigger when you bet on money lines, spread, totals, player props.
$300 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Oh, LeBron!
Oh,
that thing was in the air so long, it should have had a movie on it.
And that is the voice of ESPN play-by-play man Mark Jones, who's been ubiquitous on the network for 35 years, covering the NBA, college football, and much more, even anchoring SportsCenter. And today he is the guest on another special edition of the Sports Media Watch podcast. I'm John Lewis, and in a moment, Armand Brody and I will be joined by Mark for an in-depth discussion about his career and all the moments and memories along the way. So sit back, relax, and enjoy. It's another special edition of the SMW podcast. Well, we're very pleased, very honored to be joined by one of the longest tenured ESPN broadcasters. You might have seen him on NBA games or college football games, or if you go back far enough, on NBA Tonight and even on SportsCenter. We are joined today by Mark Jones, who's very kind to take the time out of his day to spend with us. And Mark, thanks so much for joining us.
Man, my pleasure, guys. I'm really honored and privileged to have you guys have me on the podcast. And you guys do fantastic work. And I'm glad to be part of it to talk about the business and the journey a little bit.
Yeah, well, why don't we start with that journey? You are in year 35 with ESPN. I think a lot of people might not realize how long you've been there. And this is a company, obviously, we've seen so much turnover for so many years. And you are someone who is in very select company. You and Steve Levy, a handful of others, who were on that SportsCenter set that most people remember from Dan and Keith, right?
Yeah.
You were on that set way back when. What has it been like to be with this same company, this iconic company, for all of this time and see through all the changes that have happened?
It's wild, John. Like, I signed with ESPN in June of 1990, and it almost didn't happen. A funny story. I was offered a position as a sports reporter / weekend anchor in Chicago at WMAQ, the NBC affiliate, just 3 weeks before I signed with ABC and ESPN. And I was on my way down to Chicago to fly, because I'd kind of verbally agreed, my agent and I kind of said, yeah, this looks good. I was flying down to Chicago to look for apartments to live in. Before I got to the airport, my agent called me and said, Mark, we're done. I said, what do you mean? What do you mean, Lou? He said, well, ABC and ESPN saw your take and they want to speak to you before we actually sign off on the deal in Chicago. I was like, who? ESPN? Okay, you know what? And this is in the middle of, you know, Michael Jordan's big run in Chicago, right? The beginning of it. And I was thinking Chicago's a great sports town. You know, the Bulls, White Sox, Cubs, Bears, all the great sports teams, college and pro. And we did a U-turn, man, and went down to New York a couple days later, had a great meeting with the people from ESPN and ABC, and signed the deal the following week. And it was really a week-long, 4 or 5 day-long whirlwind that placed me at ESPN in the first place. And from there, you know, starting off in June doing sports centers, doing shows with Bob Lee, Chris Berman, the late great legend departed and he went home to the Lord way too early. Tom Meese was also part of the gang. John Saunders, another one of my guys who I looked up to, because he had traveled the road a few years ahead of me, getting to work with so many big names at the age of 27, I think I was at the time, was mind-boggling, you know, to be able to sit down at my computer terminal and punch out a sports center, write leads to NBA games, NFL games, big college football games, big college basketball games that I had always dreamed about doing. It was utopian for me, man. You know, it was Wakanda. It was sports Wakanda for me, you know, and, I look back on that now and think 35 years later, I think only Berman, who still appears, irregularly on ESPN, and, Lee Corso. And I think it might be one other person. I've been there as long as anyone outside of those two or three people. So, you know, longevity certainly has served me well. And, I think being able to be passionate about everything you do still, everything I do, is part of the fuel that I use. And it keeps me going for maybe another 35. But it's been a lot of change, John and Armin, a lot of change. Yeah.
Out of curiosity, you know, when you got there, ESPN was 11 years old. What was the status that it had in the industry? It was well known, but it wasn't the worldwide leader yet. But was it something where you knew this is the place?
Yeah, it was like one-stop shopping for a sportscaster if you wanted to get your hands on every type of imaginable inventory, right? They had, you know, you could put your hands on the NBA. I was hosting the NBA Today show. You could do college basketball, which I also love, college football. I did one of the de facto national championship games in 91-92, that season, I believe it was Colorado. It was Georgia Tech against Virginia in one of the before the college football playoff that we have now, when it was just 1 and 2 and they voted on it. I was met with so many big time events and big time personalities. I remember going to the NBA All-Star game and the NBA Finals, and in my first 6 years at ESPN, being able to be side by side interviewing Michael Jordan at all of the NBA Finals, to the point where, you know, he'd see me coming. Hey, Mark, you like the suit today. And, it was on so much so early. And at some points I found myself, guys, saying, okay, I need to slow down, 'cause I don't know how much better it's going to get than this, you know?
Now, you've got to give us, Mark, you got to give us a Chris Berman story. There has to be something there.
Boomer, I don't really have one that jumps out. Just being able to watch him and listen to him and watch him punch out a script. And I really admired the way that he danced on his feet. You know, like, Boomer was giving people bars before people really knew, if you think about it, right? And I always admired that about him. And we have, you know, full disclosure, we have the same agent, right? So he kind of looked out for me a little bit. And Boomer was always very kind to me. He knew I was coming from, you know, Toronto, Canada at the time, and still getting my feet wet in the industry and feeling my way around ESPN and small town Connecticut. You know, coming from a city of 3 million in Toronto to rural Connecticut was probably the biggest adjustment that I had to make at the time. So he was always very kind and went out of his way. Hey, Jonesy, did you figure out the print function on the script yet? Did you figure? Because back then it was a whole different deal. We still use paper scripts back at the time. Now we're on tablets, right? But I always will remember Boomer as a guy that went out of his way to be very helpful to me. And I'll always be grateful and appreciative of that.
How did you balance studio work and play-by-play? You were doing both pretty early in your ESPN career.
Yeah. And, you know, that was part of the beauty of being at ESPN, and still is, even though I'm primarily just play-by-play. I haven't done studio since hosting the NBA draft lottery about 3-4 years ago. But it was fun to be able to do both, to be in the studio hosting the NBA Today show and later hosting NBA Countdown, and be in the studio with the likes of Magic Johnson and Jalen Rose and Avery Johnson and some of the greats of the sport, guys that had won NBA championships. And then, you know, do that from Monday to Thursday, and then on the weekend go out and fly and do a game, whether it be sideline reporting on the NBA or play-by-play on college basketball. So I really had it good. It was you really had to move and shake, though, because there were no days off. You know, it was a 7-day-a-week job, and I'm to this day, I never complain about it. I always tell people, guys, in this industry, they pay me to travel. That's the hard part. You know, they pay me to sit in that airport for 4 hours on a delay to get to my destination. That's when the fun starts, you know. So balancing those two jobs was not that very difficult, because I was always deeply ensconced in both. And the great thing about living in and around Connecticut at the time, I stayed in Stamford. I would drive into, so we would do the studio show. We'd tape it on Mondays and Tuesdays, and then it would air on Tuesday night. And then a lot of Wednesday nights, I would drive into New York City and catch a lot of the New York Knicks games. So, you know, I would go in and, you know, hang out in the locker room after the games and, you know, talk to Charles Smith and hang out with some of the guys, go to dinner afterwards at Sylvia's uptown, and got to know a lot of the players and establish a lot of great relationships in the sport, because little did I know at the time that I was forming a great base for being able to provide my own content. Because if I know Charles Smith, if I know Patrick Ewing, a fellow Jamaican, by the way, if I know, you know, current day Anthony Edwards, I don't need to go online to get stories. I don't need to read somebody else's articles. I can pick up the phone and get it off the corner myself, you know? So that balancing act between those two roles, studio and play-by-play, ended up serving me well.
You mentioned a few folks you worked with in the studio, but I'm curious, what was it like to work with Bill Walton in that NBA studio?
Bill is probably one, and I love Bill. I learned so much from him in terms of he masked his zaniness and his craziness. It masked his intelligence. This guy could recite to you a lineage of history going back to the Byzantine Empire or Mansa Musa's empire in Mali back in the day in Africa. Or he was one of the smartest men that I ever worked with. And his approach and presentation on television during the studio and the remote broadcast was unique, because it taught me to move and shake and ad-lib on your feet, because you can't be not reacting to some of the stuff that he was saying. You got to laugh. He'll say something crazy and whack, and I'll be like, Bill, really? And go on with the game. And he taught me how to listen, because there was humor in what he was saying a lot of times, but there was also a lot of fact in what he was saying as well. And he would draw on some of the great conversations that and experiences he had playing in the NBA, playing for John Wooden, one of the greatest coaches ever, talking about shuffle cuts off the elbow, talking about pin downs in certain plays where, okay, now listen, folks, because this guy's dropping some science on you right here. So it was one of my most fun and enjoyable experiences. And Bill's up there with the Lord playing basketball right now and saying some crazy stuff too.
Is there any particular Walton memory? Because I know there's one Walton moment that always goes viral with him talking about Shaq and some satellite that's about to crash to the earth.
Yeah. Oh, man. He would, the ones that always caught me were he would be talking about a team's approach in the game and compare it to the ancient Roman Empire with, you know, Nero playing the fiddle while Rome is burning and they need to call a timeout. I'm like, man, that's poetic, man. That's like, I remember him saying that once or twice, and that kind of caught me. And it really told me how deep this dude was.
I you're talking about people dropping knowledge. And that makes me immediately think about Hubie Brown, who you worked with so many times, who just retired. So many people have talked about Hubie's kindness, but I'd love to know from you, what was it like sitting beside him for so many games?
Man, doing a game with Hubie is a different experience because for somebody like me, who is always, I'm a basketball nerd, right? I'm an NBA nerd. I'm really fascinated by the tactical approach, what kind of offense a team is running versus a particular type of defense, what kind of ball screen defense is a team using against a certain offense, how is a guy coming off a screen in the first quarter versus how is he coming off the screen in the next sequence or the second quarter. And Hubie is the best at being able to break all of that down. So at times early in my career, I had to make sure not to get too caught up in figuring out what he just said and saying, oh yeah, and documenting the play as it's happening in real time, because he's so brilliant. I think one of my indelible memories of Hubie and doing games with him over the years will always be a story that he told me about a certain player and about coach-player relationships, how he said, Jonesy, he goes, Jonesy, kid, okay, kid, the players must know that you love them, okay? And he told me the story about one player who had been traded away from his team and wasn't producing as well. And the coaches on that new team talked to him and said, what's happening? And the player basically said, well, you know, I don't feel like y'all love me the way Hubie did. and it really spoke to his credo and his approach with players, that everything that you want to say to them can be acerbic and caustic at times, but they have to know that it comes from a place of love. And Hubie, man, I wish I could work with him for the rest of my career, because he is just a brilliant basketball mind. And in those moments after games, when we go back to the hotel and go to the hotel lounge, being able to hear all the great stories about him coaching Lou Alcindor at the time, aka Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, later in his career, and going as a assistant coach in his second or first year with the Bucks, having to go downstairs and tell Kareem, hey, we're going 2-a-days. Would you mind coming upstairs and joining the rest of the team? And, you know, being tasked with a little bit of heavy lifting as a new coach. He had a million stories that he graced me with. And I'm always going to cherish those, and I'm going to miss them moving forward.
Let me jump in here, because I want to set this up correctly. These are some Mark Jones-isms. He was all over him like the plastic on grandma's couch. Hotter than fish grease. That's one that the people really know you for. And
okay.
He just put him in the friend zone. I need the story behind these, sir.
Man, you know what? Honestly, I'm a product of hip hop culture. You know, going back to, I still believe Public Enemy is the best rap group ever, and Fight the Power is the best song ever. But I keep up with a lot of the, I got young kids, right? I got kids in their early 20s and one in his late 20s. So I've always enjoyed hip hop culture. If you look back at some of my old sports centers and NBA Today's, it's like, hey, you'll see a lot of the same patterns. But it's about being able to just, I just spit it out. I really do. There are people that think, oh, he must sit at home and write these down. It's the music and the influence of the culture. I just spit it out. Like, I remember I had a game two years ago when Kevin Huerter made a great move and two defenders for the San Antonio Spurs went flying by, and I said, oh, he put them on a flight like an IG model. You know, I was thinking about Polo G's Flued Out song right at the time. And I mean, you should hear the stuff that doesn't get on television when I'm at home watching a game with my wife. Like that stuff right there is, that's that's the real gold. Some of my favorites, it's being in a space, I think, Armon and John, where you're staying present and you must have fun with the broadcast. As long as you document the game, analyze the game you're supposed to, set up your analyst the way you're supposed to. And I'll ask you guys, do you know what the E in ESPN stands for? Entertainment. So guys, if you don't have seasoning on your food, hey, I'm sorry, nobody's coming, right? Right?
You're right.
You gotta have a little bit of seasoning on the food. So, I enjoy spitting out catchphrases and, whether it's Moneybag Yo or Boss Man D-Lo. And it's funny because, some people will catch it. It'll land on some people it won't. My favorite, if you're asking me my favorite now, it was Colorado against Colorado State a couple years ago. And Shiloh Sanders picks off a pass and he goes 80 something yards the other way on a pick six. And Weezy is on the sidelines watching the game because he had did an album drop leading the Buffaloes onto the field. So as he picks off the ball, I said, he's running. Shiloh Sanders picked six. Oh, he's stunting like his daddy because I saw Weezy on the sideline. And we all know that's one of his hits, right? So that to me it's about being able to stay present, have fun, and just make the call. Some people are going to get it. Some people won't. I had a boss at ESPN many, many years ago when did a Georgia Tech Florida State football game, block field goal. Georgia Tech recovers it, runs it into the end zone on a miraculous finish. They win the game as a result of that. And I said, wow, what a time to be alive, right? And one of my bosses at ESPN the next day calls me up and says, Mark, I'm not sure how I feel about that call. What a time to be alive. And that was when he had just dropped that album, right? And I said, if you're not sure how you feel about it, maybe I should tell you that, Jeff Long, the president of the College Football Association, said it was the call of the year. He loved it. And they're printing up t-shirts right now in Atlanta on campus that say, what a time to be alive.
They did.
It was like, oh, okay. All right. So that's the story to my younger self, guys, is that I would have told my younger self, no matter what kind of feedback you get from some people in the corner offices, be your authentic self. And that's my authentic self. And that's what I pass on to the next generation, especially of African-American broadcasters. Listen, Main Street America is always going to be 2 or 3 years late on what's up. They found out about the gritty 3 years late, right? We'd already been doing it. So just be yourself is the message that I usually like to say. I like to say just document the game and be yourself and be on point with your facts.
Now, I will say when you brought up Weezy, I did think you meant Isabel Sanford.
That would be moving
yes,
on.
Yes, indeed. Indeed. I will also say anyone who has ever watched any Florida State football, of course, remembers that game against Georgia Tech. If you're a Florida State viewer, you might remember that even more than the national championship that they won right around that time as well. That was...
What a wild finish wasn't it? I still can't believe that.
It sure was.
I just screamed, what a time to be alive, because that's what I was thinking. Yeah.
One of the interesting things, you brought up, kind of the response that you get. Is there a comfort level that you get with, the length of your tenure as you become more established with being able to be more comfortable being yourself on the air? Are you more comfortable now than you might have been, say, in 1997?
I would say definitely. And that just comes with increased experience, like a lot of the things, right? Learning experience. But there's always a little, extra component when it comes to people not understanding culture sometimes. Let me give you an example. There was a producer at ABC, and this is 1991. Okay, so you have to think of context here. There was a producer at ABC that did not like my style of broadcasting. He was like, what the hell is he saying? When Greg Hill scored the touchdown, he said he takes it to the house. Nobody knows what he's talking about. He shouldn't be saying that on air. He shouldn't be on our air saying that. And thank God for there was a producer in the room, Kim Belton, African-American dude who stood up and said, hey, listen, you know, Mark speaks to a larger audience maybe than the one that you're associated with or might be familiar with. And there are a lot of people that understands what he means when he says he takes it to the house for a touchdown. And, you know, 2 years later, it became okay. You know, it became okay when Dan Patrick and Craig Kilborn started saying it too. But I took a lot of bullets for that stuff, a lot of criticism and bullets. And it's, and fast forward now, guys, to 2024 in college football. What graphic do you see on the bottom line when there's a touchdown? What does it say? It says, take it to the house, right? Yeah. They wanted to run me out of college football for that at one point. And here we are. So the moral to the story is I am a lot more comfortable now in being able to discern between somebody who will get it in a couple of years versus somebody who has a valid critique of my presentation, you know. Does that make sense?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Did you ever kind of commiserate with Stuart Scott, who kind of,
always,
you know, dealt with a lot of the same stuff?
Always. Stuart and I kind of ushered in a different, you know, I actually started before Stuart a couple of years. He had such, you know, great presence, of course, on SportsCenter. And I was mainly just NBA Today and play by play. So a lot of the, uniqueness, and flavor that you might hear from me was just on the games, but you saw and heard it from Stuart all the time. He was brilliant at the way he did SportsCenter. And, you know, I miss him every day because Stuart and I would sit around and talk about some of the fights we had with, people that didn't quite see it our way. And ultimately some would come around and say, hey, you know what, Jonesy, you're right. You're right on that one. I didn't get it at the time, but I get it now. And, so Stuart and I would, kind of bounce stuff off each other and say, hey, man, how you doing, man? is the block hot today? You good? And, we had our own kind of special, bond in that way, and that we were both a little bit different and, both trying to carve out, our own niche. And, hey, listen, neither of us really cared whether people had got it or not, you know, cause that's who Stuart was and that's who I am. So if you get it, great. You know, if you don't, that's great too. You know, hope you keep watching, but you know. I think a lot of times we came to the realization that we're kind of fighting the same boogeyman, and it was okay. You know, and you know, a lot of times I would talk to him about balance, and you know, that's why I'm quick to be, when presented with the opportunity, extremely eloquent and profound in my descriptions with what some of my critics call SAT words. You know, and they, you know, I once had somebody tell me, hey, Mark, why do you use such big words? I'm like, what do you mean? My dad was fluent in Spanish, English, and Latin. My grandfather was an English professor. And my older brother and I would have to read certain words in the dictionary and read the definition of my grandfather. Like the language is who I am. I like strong descriptions. And if you're in this business and you can't use 21% of the words in the language when everyone else uses just 20, then, you know, what makes you professional? you know. So that's my approach. It's being able to speak here when I need to and want to, and speak at the other end of the spectrum when I want to, you know, from the boardroom to the corner, you know. And if you can cover everything in between, that's the goal. So
listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $300 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $300 into something bigger when you bet on moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$300 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
What was that time like working with Robert Griffin III, doing those games at ESPN for the time you guys were together?
I thoroughly enjoyed working with Robert. Robert with me was a extremely great teammate to work with. He has great enthusiasm for college football. He has incredible insights on college football. And I enjoyed my time working with him. It was fun. We at times would finish each other's sentences. You know what I mean? It's like he would say, "Oh man, he's on a wave." I'd say, "Like a do-rag." We had a lot of fun. I don't know that I've had more fun. Just spontaneous, you know, spitting stuff out, as I had with Robert, and, a tremendously hard worker. But I think what happens in this business sometimes is if you have quote unquote too much fun, somehow you're perceived as not working hard enough. Like, you got to look like you're working hard and, you know, roll up your sleeves and sweat hard, even though you may not be doing shit. You know what I mean? Whereas you can have a lot of fun and be brilliant and hit on all the cogent points that you're supposed to hit. But if you make it fun, people are going to think, that you're not working hard. And, you know, I found Robert to be, great to work with, fantastic to work with. And I wish him all the success in the world in his new assignment at Fox, by the way. He'll kill it. No question.
You know, a few years ago, you had a very unexpected opportunity. Mike Breen had COVID and missed game 7 of the Eastern Conference Finals and the first 2 games of the NBA Finals. And you filled in. Those are obviously, you're talking about NBA Finals games and a conference final game 7. What was that experience like? Just one, when did you have the sense that this was something, you've done the finals and conference finals on radio before, but when did you get the sense that this was something that you would have to do on TV?
I'll never forget the day I got a phone call from Tim Corrigan, our coordinating producer. I had been back here at home in Miami driving my now departed dog who just passed away on Saturday. His name's Rasta. Was with us for 11 plus years. I was driving him to the vet for his regular checkup and got a phone call from Tim saying, "Hey, we might need you out here." And this is, you know, like I said, like you said, it's in the midst of COVID. So, I said, "I'll be right out." I did a U-turn. My wife took the dog to the vet. I came home. She helped me pack up a couple of suits and some clothes and some underwear and socks and a couple of suits and put the Versace in the bag. And, you know, it was time to bounce and got out to San Francisco and still kind of waited it out because, you know, we were in a different time and space, as you all remember. And, you know, Mike might have tested negative the next day. So I think I found out the day of it was still a go as I remember it. And, you know, in that first game, I think it was just Mark Jackson, myself, and Lisa, because Jeff, I think, hadn't tested out. So it was just the three of us. And lo and behold, it became a historic moment in the first ever all African-American announce crew for the NBA Finals. And God's hand works differently sometimes. And I considered it and still do an honor and a privilege to be able to call the NBA Finals. If you look back, guys, over the years, you know, it's Mike Breen, it's Bob Costas, and I don't know who else that's ever called the NBA Finals over the last few decades. So that was game one. So big exhale after game one. And I'm thinking, okay, well, Mike will probably be good for game two. I'm all good. Go to dinner. Everything's good. Wake up the next morning. Did I have to go again? I'm like, hey, I'm ready. I got like two chains. I got two suits. You know what I mean? And did another one. And this time Jeff joined us because he had tested out. And it was and always will be one of the top, you know, experiences that I'll ever have in the NBA, because in my sportscasting career, my 35 years, to be able to call the NBA Finals between the Warriors and the Celtics, it doesn't get any better than that. So I can truly say, guys, that I've checked the box there. I've checked a meaningful, significant, weighty box for myself. You know, that I had done the NBA Finals on ESPN 3D several years before, but this is on linear TV. It was a different game. So it was fun. I'm happy for the experience. And I remember finding out later on that Mike Breen was in the room next to me. I'm like, oh, shoot. Dude, I should have been sliding meals to him under the door or something. You know what I mean? You know, because we were all kind of sequestered still, you know.
Now, it was it's Breen, Al Michaels, Brad Nessler, who did it for 1 year at the start, Costas, okay. Marv, Dick Stockton, and that's going back to Gary Bender, and then Brent, and that's pretty much everybody back to like ABC, back in the days of like Chris Schenkel, and so, yeah, very select company.
Wow. That's great. Yeah, I love the NBA as much as anything, guys. I mean, you know, in my chair, we're all storytellers, right? Play by play, we're all glorified storytellers. You document the game, you know, time, score, strategy, all that stuff. But if you're not telling the players' stories accurately and properly and making the viewers want to care about the players and the outcome, then you're doing it wrong. And, you know, the best way I find to be able to do that is just to live it. You know, I live my job. You know, I don't golf. Last night I went to Miami Pro League because they got a nice pro-am here in Miami at home and saw like six or seven NBA guys playing. Najee Marshall just happened to show up as well from the Dallas Mavericks and, you know, Jericho Sims, Milwaukee Bucks, Josh Hart, a bunch of guys. They'll just roll in. Tyler Hero, Bam Adebayo. So, you know, when I can sit down with these guys, in the summertime and spend 15, 20 minutes or grab a bite to eat with somebody after a game, then that's, like I was saying earlier, that's fantastic content for the season for me.
Now, you did do one other finals in the WNBA back in 2003.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. I was just curious, you know, the WNBA has gotten so much bigger now. You have done a few games in recent years. You did Brittany Griner's first game back after her detainment, but you haven't done a ton of WNBA since those days early on. Would you be interested in doing some more WNBA as the league kind of hits it at really big?
I love the W, and you know, I'll be one of the first to scream it out loud from the top of the mountain that the talent in this league has always been outstanding. You know, calling those finals back when you mentioned with Lisa Leslie and, you know, Tweedy, you know, Nikki McCray, you know, back Simone Augustus was still doing her thing back in the day. Ivory Latta, she had the best, her and Simone Augustus had the best Iverson crossover of any woman still to this day. Best handles ever. I love the W. I love the W. I'd love to call as much W as I can, schedule permitting. I think it's a great league. I think I've really enjoyed its growth. The skill level in the league continues to just climb and climb and climb. And, you know, it's fun to be able to look out on the court and see some of these players now that, you know, my two daughters played against. You know, I remember watching my daughter Sophia was the high school player of the year in the state of Florida in basketball. And she played against Caitlin Clark, All Iowa Attack, in an AAU tournament up in Daytona Beach when they were both juniors, you know, or rising juniors or rising sophomores, can't remember. But to see some of these brilliant women on the court as they are now in the W after 4 years of college really makes me feel great. It's one of the great sports stories, I think, of our lifetime, the growth of this league, the popularity of this league. And, you know, I'm really happy to see expansion happening, you know, in Toronto, in Cleveland, you know, Philadelphia. You know, I'm hoping that they get a team somehow down here in South Florida, where I live too, because I was a season ticket holder for the, do you guys remember the Miami Soul?
Debbie Black, Cherie Sam, yeah.
Hey, Chuck, you got it. Yeah, man. Yep. Funny story about, you know, Tony Ferentino was a coach on that team. And he called me one day, said, "Hey, Mark, round up five guys. I need a practice team against the girls." And we went down and scrimmaged against the Miami Soul players, you know. And I can remember Ed Pickney was there too, because he had just come out of retirement. He had just retired with the Miami Heat. And I remember getting the ball off an inbound pass and Debbie Black was picking me up full court. I'm like, "Debbie, I'm just here because a friend asked me. Don't be pressing me and embarrassing me."
We're staying with basketball, Mark. You made a decision a few years ago to become a part of the Sacramento Kings broadcast team. And just curious, what motivated that decision and how do you find the balance between your national work at ESPN and your local work with the Kings?
Yeah, it has been a wonderful, wonderful relationship. I love my Sacramento Kings. Absolutely love the organization top to bottom. They approached me in 2020 about the job. And, you know, there's only 30 of them in the league. And as a national broadcaster, I thought, you know, I already got a handle on all 30 teams in the NBA. This would be a little bit of this would be a very new experience, though, in the sense of being vested with a local team. So, the only stumbling block to that, guys, believe it or not, was my daughter, Sophia Jones, who now, by the way, works for the Golden State Valkyries. She does their radio call on the broadcast. She's their analyst. And she was going away to San Jose State as a freshman on the women's basketball team in that same year, 2020. So, you know, San Jose State is only an hour and change from Sacramento. And when the job offer was made by the Kings, I called up Sophia. I said, "Hey, Sophia, how do you feel about Dad being right up the highway from you? Am I cramping you? Are you good with this? You good if Mom and I decide we want to go work with the Kings?" And it was like dead silence. I said, yeah, it's okay, Daddy. It's okay. So with my daughter's blessing, the answer was yes, and took the Kings job. And it's been fun. I mean, the coaching staff there through the years has given me, guys, a different prism to see the NBA. You know, a lot of times as national broadcasters, we talk about, oh, it's the second night of a back-to-back. The team might be tired coming in. Now I know what it actually feels and looks like because I've been on those charter flights with the Sacramento Kings and landed in New Orleans at 2 a.m. and get to the hotel at 2:45 and finally able to fall asleep at 4:30 and wake up the next day and play the second night of a back-to-back. When I'm looking at the coaches and players, I'm thinking, yeah, there's a reason why they're dragging a little bit today. It's not just words now. Being able to be immersed in it has given me new perspective. And you know, Mike Brown as head coach, Doug Christie now have been kind enough to give me incredible access to the team to be able to, you know, talk about the players and their stories and their insights. And as we talked about earlier, make them want to care, make the viewers want to care. So it's been great. I love being in Sacramento. That 2022-23 season Beam team was just like a ride I've never experienced before. I'll never forget it. It was fun with Coach Brown being coach of the year and, you know, being able to garner some of the national spotlight. They've got some of the best fans in the NBA in Sacramento and love the city, just love the city. You know, it was a little cooler than I thought it was, you know, coming from Miami. I didn't know that Northern California had 38 degree mornings like that in January, but no, it's all good, man. I love going jogging around the Capitol in the morning and getting back to the crib. So I hope that goes on forever.
I wanted to ask you a question about, you know, obviously we live in a social media society, and that means you're hearing from people all the time. How do you deal with, you know, criticism that you get on social, and not just for issues like social issues and broader topics like that, but as a broadcaster, we've seen it from people like Joe Buck. Everybody gets, oh, you hate my favorite team, you hate my favorite player. And definitely when I see the social media reaction to you, Denver Nuggets fans in particular feel like you've got, like you've got some kind of issue with Jokic. Obviously, we all know national broadcasters don't have any beef with local teams or anything like that. But how do you deal with that?
I'll be honest with you. I'm not on social media anymore, man. I haven't been on Twitter since November of last year. I'm on Blue Sky because I find the discourse there a little bit more analytical and intelligent. Twitter has gotten a little bit too vitriolic for me, and I couldn't tell you how to deal with it because I'm unaware of it. I'm oblivious to it. I remember speaking to Steve Kerr about this last NBA season, and we were talking about social media. I said, "How's it been, Steve? Not being on Twitter?" He goes, "Mark, blissful." So I'll use that word too. It has been blissful. It has been utopian. I couldn't tell you how to deal with it because I don't get into arguments that don't have any kind of fact. You know, I understand the zealousness of certain fan bases. Everybody, that's why they call it fan. It's fanatical, right? It's fanaticism. By definition, they're fans. So yeah, they're going to think that everything you say that isn't for their team is hate. I get it. You know, I don't take it to heart because, you know, I've always felt that I was very measured and calculated in a lot of my statements. And when it comes to basketball in particular, you know, I can tell you what plays the Denver Nuggets run. You know, I know what LA Open means. You know, I know what it is when they run Peja action. So my basketball knowledge in that respect, you know, you can challenge it if you want, but I played collegiate basketball. I know what I'm talking about, you know. So if they want to have issue with what I say, that's their prerogative. That's cool. I'm glad they're backing their team. I don't argue with people that don't know what it's like to draw up the Phoenix Suns 2-up special for Devin Booker. I'm just not going to argue with you that much. You know what I mean? I understand your fanaticism. That's cool. But if you're telling me this, and I know it's that because I've spoken to coaches and players, and if I say that this guy is not a great defender, and I know that to be true because players and coaches have told me that, and I see it with my own eyes, you know, okay, you can tell me he's a great defender, but okay. There's an alternate universe for everybody out there, man. I'm good with that.
Now, Mark, we know that there are some changes to how we'll be watching the NBA on television starting this fall with NBC and Amazon. we can expect you to still be a key part of ESPN's NBA coverage, can't we?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. As of this minute, I plan on being with ESPN and doing my fair share of NBA games and doing my Sacramento Kings games as well. And, you know, it's been 35 years and counting with the mothership. So, you know, I've really enjoyed it, man. And I always believed that my next year is going to be my best year. I really do. You know, I'm gearing up. I was at Summer League. I keep tabs on everything. I hear people complain about this and that with the NBA and the way it's covered. I love the league, man. And the people in the league office know that. And ESPN knows that. In fact, you asked about Sacramento a minute ago. I know people in the league office called me immediately after I took the job and were thrilled with the fact that I took that job, that they were going to have a national guy calling their games. And, so yeah, I continue to go forward with both ESPN and the Sacramento Kings. And, you know, it's going to be a fun new landscape with NBC and Amazon and Peacock being streaming partners and over the air linear TV partners. And I love it, man. Everybody gets to eat. You know, everybody gets to eat, man. More faces, more people at the table to eat. So I'm all for it. I mean, I look forward to seeing Michael Grady. I look forward to seeing Mike Tirico, one of my former colleagues on air. I look forward to seeing some of the new stars that are going to emerge, you know, Taylor Rooks and Dirk Nowitzki as an analyst. I look forward to seeing their coverage because overall, I think it's great for business.
And maybe I'll get you out of here on this question here. You obviously, you're part of a broadcasting family. You mentioned before that your daughter is an analyst for the Valkyries and your brother, Paul, has worked in Canadian television for years as well. What is it like? I mean, there's a lot of broadcasting families, the Alberts, the Bucks, et cetera, but what is it like to be part of that and be able to, one, count on loved ones for the ability to know what you're talking about when you're talking about the performance you just had on a game, or to provide counsel to your daughter based on your experience? What is that like?
Man, it's fun. We've always been a sports family. My brother and I grew up, you know, Sunday afternoons, looking at our watches at about 12:15, hoping Pastor would wrap up his sermon so we could run home and catch the 1 p.m. afternoon NBA game. And it was usually Boston against Philadelphia. It was usually, Dr. J against Bird. It was the Celtics Sixers. It was the Lakers Celtics. And, you know, watching the Buffalo Braves, who Buffalo still had a team back then. That's how old I am. And we've always been a sports family, and my kids have always played sports. You know, that's kind of just the way it's always been. Our television always stays on ESPN or NBA TV, you know. And with my brother, he was one of the originals with the Toronto Raptors doing their games, you know, play-by-play and color now on the radio and NBA TV Canada doing the Raptors stuff. I mean, he just went into the Canadian Basketball Hall of Fame. Shout out Paul Jones. And both of us played collegiate basketball at York University. I've represented Canada in international basketball competitions. So basketball has always been a part of our family, you know. And then my daughter now, she majored in radio, TV, film, and journalism at San Jose State. So it was kind of a natural path for her. She stuck around watching doubleheaders of NBA games beside me and saying, "Daddy, man, they just ran that horn set and it worked again." I said, "Yeah, Sophie, that's crazy, isn't it?" Like, she held me down a lot of times late at night watching games. And so that's why she's in the business now too, and calling games for the Golden State Valkyries in the W. And once in a while, you know, I'll hit her and say, "Hey, you know, I really like that comment you made last night about playing in the point five and keeping the ball moving, switching it strong side, weak side, top of the key, whatever." I'll get a chance to critique her, and my brother and I will talk about games all the time deep into the night. I'm on the West Coast, so a lot of times he'll know that I'm driving home late at night and he's still up after his game. So he'll hit me and we'll talk for 30 minutes right up until the time I pull into my driveway. So it's great to be able to share that experience and talk TV, talk sports all at the same time with all of us. And, you know, my other daughter, my older daughter and my son, they play basketball too. So we live it, man. We live it, you know, we live it. We live it. And I've been blessed, man, to do 35 years at ESPN. And, you know, like I said, they've been wonderful and I've got great bosses and creative people that I work with up there. And, you know, when you're the number one dog, people will like to take shots at you. And over time, you get thick skin, you get bulletproof. So, you know, ESPN, it has been a fabulous place for me to work over the last 35 years. Fabulous. And I love my family up there.
All right. Well, Mark, thank you so much for your time today. Really appreciate it. I think this was another great talk about really one of the longest careers, and a lot of people don't realize it because, you know, I think you probably know you do look about 20 years younger than you actually are. So a lot of people don't realize that you've been
thanks, John.
That you've been in this business.
Hey, you guys know black don't crack. Come on.
Well, I don't know. Sometimes when you look in the mirror, when I look in the mirror, sometimes I'm not sure. But hey. All right. Hey. Yeah,
no, it's hey, no, man. God is good all the time. You already know. You already know.
All right. Well,
thanks for having me.
Hey, thank you.
Thank you, Mark.
Well, thanks again to Mark Jones and, of course, to Armand for joining me. Thanks to all of you for listening. We'll be back with an up-to-date episode of the SMW podcast and all the issues going on in sports media next week.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $300 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $300 into something bigger when you bet on money lines, spread, totals, player props.
$300 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.